I've done two missions with MSF, one in Chad in Central Africa and one in Haiti. The one in Chad was in a nutritional program, and in Haiti worked in cholera and in the earthquake area.
For a rural Victorian, this is definitely some pretty interesting experiences for you. What exactly have you been doing there?
Yeah, it's definitely a long way from home. As a logistician, you're basically the foundation for a medical program. So my work is things like construction, electricity, maintenance. I run the fleet of vehicles and supply chains, things like that.
You must have been confronted with quite a few harrowing experiences. Africa's certainly in the news a lot at the moment and in our hearts with so many people affected by famine. Have you seen much of that firsthand?
Yeah, the program in Chad, actually, it was an emergency nutritional program throughout the whole Sahel Belt area, so the three main countries that were affected by this particular nutritional crisis were Mali, Niger and Chad. And so I was in the western part of Chad near the border of Cameroon, and we had a fairly significant rate of severe acute malnutrition amongst children. So our program focused on under 5-year-olds, yeah, who are severely acutely malnourished.
Are all of the NGOs welcomed by the locals?
I think it really depends upon the area where you're working. Say in Chad, you have in the western part of the country, it's a lot more politically stable. In the eastern part of the country, there's a lot more actors who are working there. I think that's that can create some tensions within local community sometimes. But where I was, we were very welcome. We came with a lot of food, and we came with a lot of capacity to be able to do outreach work and to be able to work with the kids who were the most sick and who really did need it.
Now, have you also been to Haiti following the disastrous earthquake that struck them? What kind of shape is Haiti in now, and how are the people holding up?
Look, there's a lot of work which has been done, and there's clearly still a lot of work to do. I was mainly based in Léogâne, which was the epicentre of the earthquake, which at the time was about 80 to 90% destroyed, all of the buildings, and in a town of 140,000 people, about between 20 to 30,000 people died. So you have a huge change in population. It's an enormous psychological event as well. And even now, I think the vast majority of people in Léogâne are still living in internally displaced people camps. And so a year and a half after the earthquake, you can see that there is a lot of reconstruction happening, but it's there's still a very long way to go. And still psychologically, some of my staff say that they can access more permanent shelter, like proper housing, but they prefer to stay in their plastic sheeting shacks because psychologically they're not prepared to go back into a permanent structure yet.
They must be faced with so much trauma, but is that even a priority right now in dealing with them psychologically when there's so much structurally that they need to fix?
I think that social programs can go a huge way towards your reconstruction and your community spirit. When you have such a large reconstruction effort to do, working together itself is a very community healing process. There are definitely a lot of organisations which focus on that community aspect and on longer-term development and social development as well. Médecins Sans Frontières, we focus purely on the medical side of things. So in Léogâne, we'd constructed a semi-permanent hospital there with 150 beds, and we were mainly focusing on, when I was there, mainly focusing on mother and child health with maternity, paediatrics, neonatology, a couple of operating theatres, an emergency ward and outpatient departments. So once you get past that emergency phase directly after a serious natural disaster, there's still so many basic systems which don't function. We're aiming to bridge that gap until the community can have the capacity to look after themselves again.
With the huge amount of NGOs that are in countries in Africa and also in places like Haiti, mm-hmm. and there's so many donations coming from around the world, do you see the money being put to proper use? Because I think maybe a lot of people do often wonder, where is this going?
Yeah, and I think it's definitely a really valid question, and one thing which a lot of NGOs have made big strides in is financial transparency about reporting where their funds are being spent, how much is spent in individual programs. And a lot of the time now, it's quite fairly available information on the web. So if you just you can just click onto a lot of websites. MSF, you go onto their website and you can see financial reports. So for me, in the field, you really understand how a project can cost a lot of money. Say we're in Chad, our program was feeding about 5,000 to 6,000 kids a week, and by extension, all of their families. So we were going through about 100 tons of food a week, distributing to 36 outreach sites, and doing that over the course of 6 months in an emergency phase where you're setting up a program from zero. It's a really big project to undertake.
Now that we've heard about such the dire situation affecting Africa now, can you imagine from your experiences what that could be like, or could you have ever predicted that it could reach this extreme?
I think that right now there's a lot of attention on the area because it's gotten to the point where you've reached the internationally accepted definition of a famine. A famine doesn't happen overnight. It's obviously been building up for quite a while. Knowing how poor the harvest was last year and how much of a drought has been there, you can definitely see the potential for something like a major catastrophe such as that to happen. And right now, I think you have a lot of coverage on it, particularly on the Horn of Africa. And there's a lot of organisations, a lot of money, and a lot of food aid is going in there. And there's still a lot to do, looking at particularly around the area of Dadaab, the refugee camp in northern Kenya. Like, there's a couple of different MSF sections are working there at the moment. The amount of refugees who are arriving every week and the amount of resources which are there to deal with it, I can imagine it a little bit in my head that it's just a really dire situation to be waiting so long to be registered to receive between 5 to 10 litres of fresh water per person per day, which is for all of your needs for washing and cooking and cleaning, when in Australia we're trying to get down to 155 litres per person per day. So there's a lot of contrast.
Do you have that kind of perspective when you're over there, or is that only when you come home and you reflect?
When I was in Chad, I arrived a couple of weeks after the project opened, and we were just working and working, and you don't have a lot of time to really sit down and reflect and take it all in and consider, how this is often quite emotionally affecting you individually as well. For example, in Chad, at the start, we were working 13 out of 14 days, 14 to 16 hours a day in 50-degree heat. You have an immense amount of work to do. And I think it's only really at the end when you sit back and reflect and think about everything that's been happening that you realise how much of a personal emotional toll that it can take as well.
I was going to ask you that. So when you come back to Australia and sort of regroup in between posts, is that when it starts to hit you more emotionally? And do you do anything to deal with that?
Yeah, like say for example, sometimes in the field you have moments where you realise that you're very emotionally stretched, and you really rely on the people that are around you. After I finished in Chad, I went back and hung out with a couple of friends in Europe for a little while, and it really took me 2 months after that to actually have that moment where I was like, yes, I'm ready to go back to work now. You want to go back and you want to keep doing more, but sometimes have to hold yourself back and really be aware that your personal care is really important, because otherwise if you're starting to burn yourself out, then you're no good to anyone.
Do you find many other Australians over there, and do you guys band together?
With MSF, I think there's generally a little bit over 100 field workers who leave each year to go and take up a post with MSF. Definitely when you find another Australian in a mission, to have someone of your own culture there, you really realise it's so much of an outlet. Because generally when I'm working, I'm working in French and with people from all around the world. So for example, in Haiti, we had our medical director was from Cameroon, our pharmacist from Burkina Faso. My other logistician I was working with is Swiss. We have Germans and French and North Americans, Mexico, And there was one other Australian nurse who was working with me over there. It's such a, it's like a holiday to really be able to relax with your own culture, with someone who shares your similar natural humour.
You're on your little holiday now, but not for long. Where to next for you, Brian?
I'm taking up a position in Djibouti, actually in the middle of October for 3 months. The job is leading the logistical team there.
So that really is straight in the Horn of Africa, right next to Somalia, the worst affected country at the moment.
Absolutely. The main part of the Horn of Africa at the moment, which is in this group of famine, is Somalia, Ethiopia, Kenya and Djibouti. But Djibouti is a very small country, so you don't really hear a lot about it. There's only about 800,000 or 900,000 people in the country. So it's definitely a little bit overlooked, but is definitely a country which is taking a lot of refugees from Somalia and has its own issues as well.